Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is still with us. And the first debate of the presidential campaign is just over a month away. There will be only three. Senator Obama declined to participate in a series of town hall-style meetings with Senator McCain. In the latest issue of The Atlantic, James Fallows, a national correspondent for the magazine, writes about what the primary debates tell us about what we can expect in the fall. Fallows now lives in China, so we didn't see these debates live. Recently, I did what no sane person would, he wrote. I watched the entire set of presidential primary debates in sequence like the boxed set of a TV show, all 47 of them. How important are the broadcast debates? How did McCain and Obama and the moderators do? And what do you think is the most memorable moment from a presidential campaign in this year's elections or in previous ones? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org, and we'll also take questions from the audience here at the museum as well. James Fallows joins us now from our bureau in Beijing, where he's based. And nice to have you back with us, and thanks very much for staying up so late. Or did you get up early?
It's been an all-nighter for me, but I'm glad to have a chance to talk to you.
Oh, good. Now, from what I saw, these guys, McCain and Obama, are not likely to challenge Lincoln Douglas.
Well, that would be a fair point. And my article gives more attention to the Democrats, since the debates mattered more for them. But there was an overall skill difference between most of the Democrats and McCain, who is just he's not at his best in debates.
The town hall-style meetings, though, those he is very good at.
He is better at those than other forms of oratory, because it recreates, or it's the closest he comes to the medium that has served him best over the years, which is just informal chat with the press. You know, he's often said the press was his real base, because he'd been friendly with so many reporters. But so in formal speeches and in the quasi-formality of debates, he really hasn't been that strong. So the town halls are his favorite venue.
Well, we'll listen to a clip of Senator McCain at one of the debates. This was on Fox News. The network's White House correspondent, Wendell Goler, asked Senator McCain how he could convince the American public that he could push a Democratic Congress hard enough to make President Bush's tax cuts permanent.
In 2001, I proposed massive tax cuts, but I also proposed to rein in spending. Spending is out of control. We didn't lose the 2006 election because of the war in Iraq. We lost it because we in Republican Party came to Washington to change government, and government changed us. We let spending go out of control. We spent money like a drunken sailor, although I never knew a sailor drunk or sober with the imagination of my colleagues.
And that's not a bad line, and Senator McCain does have a pretty good sense of humor.
It's true, and that is the kind of thing, kind of touch, which reporters and people in Washington have known for a long time. And it's interesting that in the debates themselves, he was not able to reach that kind of offhanded humor as often as I think, you know, he would like, and presumably as he'll be trying to do when he goes up against Barack Obama.
Will it make a difference? A lot of the primary debates, there were, it seemed like 12 people on the stage on both sides. There will be only two people on the stage when he faces off against Senator Obama.
It is a huge difference to have just the two, because what made this year's primaries unusual is that there was no incumbent or even quasi-incumbent like a vice president. So all of the candidates needed airtime, so all of them would accept almost any invitation, which was quite different from in the past.
Now, going back to the Democratic side, you looked at Senator Obama and detected someone who was hesitant, thoughtful, someone who was, to be fair, ahead most of the time and therefore trying hard not to make a mistake. Yet you also said you went back and looked at some of his senatorial debates when he was in a campaign against Alan Keyes, running for the Senate in Illinois, and detected a very different Barack Obama. And first tell us about it. We'll listen to a clip from one of his debates with Alan Keyes in a minute.
So if you like, would you like me to tell first before the clip?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there are some clips from the Obama-Keyes debates of 2004 on the Atlantic site right now, and they really are high-value entertainment. On the one hand, there's Alan Keyes, who was not going to be a plausible contender for Barack Obama in that Senate race and is not going to be a plausible, you know, presidential candidate, but who is one of the phenomena of the modern rhetorical world. He speaks very fast. He has illustrations and arguments, and he's not afraid to say things which don't work in most political rhetoric, what Obama was able to do was to take this all in stride and to show a kind of ease, a kind of humor, a kind of jab-for-jab willingness, which he hasn't shown, he had not shown in the primary debates against Hillary Clinton and John Edwards. And so it's a way to see both Keyes, performing as he does, but also Obama in a way that we had not seen him on the national stage in the last year and a half.
Well, here's the clip then. This is after Obama, after Alan Keyes said that Obama's record runs counter to Jesus's teachings, the moderator of the debate asked Obama for his reaction to Keyes' assertion that his own Lord and Savior wouldn't vote for him.
Yeah, I don't need Mr. Keyes lecturing me about Christianity. That's why I have a pastor. That's why I have my Bible. That's why I have my own prayer. And I don't think that any of you are particularly interested in having Mr. Keyes lecture you about your faith. What you're interested in is solving problems like jobs and health care and education. I'm not running to be the minister of Illinois. I'm running to be its United States senator.
And that's a deft response.
It is, and it was one of several of that same character that Obama showed during the three debates with Alan Keyes. And what was interesting is that, again, it was Obama at his best, which we really saw only one time during his debates with Hillary Clinton, where Hillary Clinton, in a somewhat unattractive way, was saying, the question was, you have all these former Clinton administration advisors helping you. How is your campaign, how would your administration be any different from the Clinton record? And Hillary Clinton said, oh, yeah, I want to hear that, too. And Barack Obama very quickly and very easily and with a faint little hint of aggression said, well, Hillary, I'm looking forward to having you advise me, too. Okay. And that's what he did time and again during his debates with Keyes. So he's capable of doing that, but something about the setting with this year's debates made it harder for him to show that.
Ken?
Jim, it's Ken Rudin here. Two things that hit me. First of all, I think it's probably the last time Barack Obama mentioned the fact that he had a pastor he was proud of. But two, I think even more importantly, though, that in his race against Alan Keyes, who was not a resident of Illinois, Obama was like up 70 to 30 in the polls. I'm just wondering if that was part of the ease that Barack Obama showed in 2004, when going into 2007, 2008, clearly Hillary Clinton was the candidate to beat on the Democratic side.
That's certainly so. And I think there's another factor which is in a way even more awkward for Obama, which is that given the nature of American public life, he was in the Democratic race, he was the black candidate. And in the upcoming general election race, he is the black candidate. And there are certain that made it all the more important when going against a white female contender that he not be too aggressive, that he not seem too hostile, that he not, as he's been very, very deft in playing his racial identity, that he not give any kind of wrong signal. Against Alan Keyes, that didn't come into play. It was too black men of more or less the same age. And there, I think for whatever reason, there was a looseness to him then, which we have not seen as much since.
One quick thing, it reminds me also, in Dan Quayle, when he was elected to the Senate in 1980, he was marvelous in a debate against Birch Bayh. And yet when he ran for vice president against Al Gore in that debate in 1992, it was almost comical. It's just interesting to see what went from 1980 to 1992 in that debate.
Let's get a caller on the line. Now, let's go to line four. Adam's with us. Adam calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Adam. Go ahead.
It's funny that you mentioned comical debates. That makes me think of 2004 when Bush's only rebuttal to Kerry was that he was a flip-flopper. Also, Schwarzenegger refused. Actually, it's not a presidential debate, but it kind of blew my mind that Schwarzenegger was able to get elected with refusing to do any debates that weren't scripted.
Scripted?
Yeah. I remember hearing that Schwarzenegger refused to participate in any debates that weren't scripted.
Debates are inherently unscripted. The only person with a script is the moderator.
Scripted questions, I'm sorry.
Questions in advance. All right. That's another
thing.
I'll
take my answer off the air.
All right. Anyway, I'm not sure there was a question there, but...
Neil, can I take up one part of early part of the question when you mentioned Kerry versus Bush? Something that's interesting is how much more the expectations game matters in debates than the actual performance. Objectively, John Kerry did a lot better than George Bush, as did Al Gore in 2000 in the debates, but the expectations were so low for Bush and high for Gore and Kerry that Bush was seen as having done better than they had. And that certainly is going to be one of the main strategies that McCain camp uses against Obama. Of course, he's so eloquent. Of course, you know, he's a man of all words. You can't expect, you know, our stalwart, you know, former aviator to do as well. And so that is a key to one thing we can expect.
How much does image matter in this? And we all go back to that first televised presidential debate between Kennedy and Nixon. And a lot of people who watched it on TV thought John Kennedy was great. A lot of people who heard it on the radio thought Richard Nixon was much better.
You know, I say this both as somebody who once worked in presidential rhetoric. I was a speechwriter for Jimmy Carter long ago, and somebody who had done a lot of debates in high school and college. Presidential debates are nothing like normal debates. They're not really about logic at all. If they're closest to anything in other experience, it's a jury trial where really the advocate is trying to make the jury like him or like her, believe the essence of the person, and then belief in the arguments will come along secondarily. And if you think of all the moments in debates which have really made a difference, whether it's Kennedy's look versus Nixon's look, or Ronald Reagan saying to Jimmy Carter, there you go again, or Gerald Ford misspeaking about Poland, or you're no Dan Quayle. There wasn't any logic really involved there, but it was something about the bearing of the people and their sound and the way they looked with their opponents which crystallized something or shifted something in the public sense of how they felt about those people. And that's really what presidential debates come down to.
Unfortunately for Vice President Quayle, he was Dan Quayle. He was no Jack Kennedy.
Yeah, sorry.
We're talking with Jim Fallows of The Atlantic. He's got an article analyzing the 47 primary debates of this campaign season to find out what is likely to happen when the two major party candidates square off in three televised debates this fall. I'm Neil Cunnan, also with us Ken Rudin, our political junkie. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken?
Jim, I'm wondering what you think about. To me, I think that this most significant moment of the 2007-2008 debates was October 30th in Philadelphia, the MSNBC debate, where Hillary Clinton, I think, was masterful in every debate until that point, and then she got stuck on the driver's license for illegal immigrants, and suddenly the inevitability of Hillary Clinton disappeared.
We have a clip of tape from that moment. This is after Tim Russert asked Senator Clinton about why she favored, as the then governor of the state of New York, Eliot Spitzer, did giving driver's licenses to illegal immigrants.
We know in New York we have several million at any one time who are in New York illegally. They are undocumented workers. They are driving on our roads. The possibility of them having an accident that harms themselves or others is just a matter of the odds. It's probability. So what Governor Spitzer is trying to do is to fill the vacuum. I believe we need to get back to comprehensive immigration reform because no state, no matter how well-intentioned, can fill this gap. There needs to be federal action on immigration reform.
And that's just an excerpt of Senator Clinton's response.
But Tim Russert tried to get her to explain her answer over and over again, and she seemed to just fudge it. And Jim, that's what the question I was asking you earlier. I thought that was the beginning of the end for Hillary Clinton.
That certainly was the press attention to that in the subsequent weeks, you know, gave Obama an opening he had not had before. What's interesting is I heard through the course of these debates Hillary Clinton handle many, many hundreds of questions, and virtually all of them, I'd say all of them except that one, she was able to deal with complete confidence and precision and get out her, both respond in this kind of spontaneousness of the moment, but also get her programmed points out. This was one, it was very late at night, it was late in the debate, she'd been traveling a lot, fatigue is a huge factor in politics, as it is for me at the moment, 3 in the morning, that's my Dan Quayle quote, and so she bungled this one thing where all she had to say is that Eliot Spitzer was making the best of a bad situation created by chaotic federal immigration law. That's all she needed to say. It's what she would have done with 1,000 other questions, but that one she missed, and it is a sign of how some little weakness, some little trait shown in debate can have much greater impact than sheer logic would indicate.
Let's go to line 6, and this is going to be Carol. Carol calling us from Baltimore.
Hi.
Hi, Carol.
My favorite moment in the debate was when Barack Obama said he wasn't sure who he was running against, whether he was running against Hillary or Bill or both. And I thought that was so funny. And the crowd just went up, and I got up off of my couch, and I just couldn't believe that he said that.
I think you wrote, Jim Fallows, that Senator Clinton had a pretty good response to that, too.
Well, and that her response was actually to a similar foray, but by Tim Russert, when Tim Russert was reading a quote about terrorism, getting Hillary Clinton to disagree with it, and then revealing that the author of that quote was her husband, she said, well, he's not standing here right now, which was a very quick and perfect response from Hillary Clinton. And in the same way, I think Obama's response, which the caller mentioned, was also good in that moment.
Let me ask you, we just have a couple of minutes left, but as we look ahead to that moment when the debates are televised, we're going to have the great pageants of the conventions, the big important speeches, and again, working on the expectations. Everybody's expecting a blockbuster from Senator Obama, and we're told now maybe 20 minutes from John McCain. But nevertheless, come late September, they're going to square off in three debates. What do you think it's going to look like? What are the impressions that these two men are going to make?
Well, certainly on the Kennedy versus Nixon precedent, you would think you're going to have a 47-year-old man who is significantly taller than his opponent, who's in the flush of health. They'll be sitting down, I believe, for two of the three debates, so that minimizes the height advantage, but it is an advantage. John McCain looks older than he is. Ronald Reagan was about this age when he ran against Walter Mondale for re-election, but McCain looks older than that. So on the sheer sort of horseflesh basis, there's an advantage for Obama. Obama presumably has learned from his debates. He's done a whole lot more debating than John McCain has done in the last year, and he's gotten better. And I think his campaign may have understood the one real weakness he showed in the debates, which is that he didn't like to be criticized. He was thin-skinned and looked uncomfortable when Hillary Clinton was going right at him. No doubt that's what John McCain will do. And so the task for the Obama team is to manage expectations, and I think the task for the McCain team is to go right at him and make him uncomfortable.
Jim Fallows, thanks very much. Appreciate your staying up
all night in
Beijing. James Fallows is the national correspondent of The Atlantic. His latest article, Rhetorical Questions, is in the current edition of the magazine. You can find a link to it and several video clips from previous debates at our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ken Rudin, thank you very much.
See you, Neil.
Tomorrow, our summer movie festival continues. Send us your favorite nuke flick. It's at talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.